This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Do you think that I might forget? Oh, love is radiating further away.
And you're on Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. This is a show that explores spirituality for our community. And good evening. And we are missing one member once again.
We are. You have the priest and you have the pom.
And the pope.
We have the pope.
Not the pope, the panel operator.
We have Pope Peter, the panel operator.
We thought that sounded very
well, very suitable. Regal, yes. I could. My favourite pope is the Dutch female pope.
You must tell us about that one.
We'll talk about it. Save that one up. We'll talk
we
about
can
that later.
Save it, yes.
And we're missing Andrew the Poof because he's in Hong Kong.
Oh, we're always somewhere. Now, you were away in West Australia.
I was.
You were sort of floating around in a vat of wine.
I was contributing to the economy of Western Australia by eating and drinking. Lots of divine food, and we lurched from one cellar door to the next. And the most breathtaking beaches in the world.
Yep.
And I even saw mummy dolphins with baby dolphins.
Oh, how gorgeous.
Oh, it really was.
So I want to know, is there a truck coming back with all the boxes of wine?
There is actually. There's just the one huge lorry, which is currently lumbering along towards Melbourne, full of wine. And actually, the other thing that I loved was the olive groves and lots of fantastic olive oil. Gorgeous. Anyway, a long, distant memory. Been back a week. Tan's gone.
Well, what are we going to talk about tonight, Bertie?
Well, talking about food.
Oh, we always talk about
okay.
food.
when we take our clothes off to jump into the spa tonight, the spirit spa is talking about bananas.
That sounds quite an interesting. I don't think I'll go there. Okay, we're also going to speak to, well, we recorded an interview, Andrew and I did, with Noel, who is the Australian co-ordinator of the Seventh-day Adventist Kinship.
That's going to be very interesting.
So we're going to learn all about him and about the group and who they are and what they do.
And Noel has also brought in four or five tracks, hasn't he, that we're going to play tonight?
He has. And the first one that's coming up now is by Jason and DeMarco. I believe they are gay Christian singers. And it is a track called Echoes of Eden.
Welcome to the show. We'd like to get to know you a little bit better before we get into what you do with Kinship. So can you tell us a little bit about you? What are your interests and passions and those sorts of things?
Well, I was born at the Royal Brisbane in Queensland a long time ago. Spent most of my life, or 12 years of my life, in Western Queensland. I'm a nurse by profession. Statistics say that people don't move very far away from where they're born. Well, I actually returned to where I was born to work.
So you did have a period where you had moved away.
Yes, I spent 10 years of my life in 1980. I moved to Sydney to find a partner. Wasn't very successful in Brisbane in those early years because of Sir Joe, their attitude about people moving further south out of Queensland, and so I moved down there for 10 years, found a partner, and then moved back up to Queensland. My partner is a little older than I am, and we've been together for 29 years, with all the ups and downs that go with that. My passion is probably to help others achieve being accepted in the world, and that's from a gay and lesbian point of view. My likes are I like cooking and I like gardening. I live on an acre of land in the hinterland of the Sunshine Coast.
Yeah, as you know, this program, Spirit Lounge, is about spirituality, and just wondering if you could tell us how you would define spirituality for you.
Spirituality takes many forms. I think it's between you and your maker, if you believe that, or whatever your spirituality form you take. There are many forms of it in this world, and I think from that aspect you have to be probably aware that other people have different interpretations to you and be more tolerable to those interpretations. And I think as a gay person actually gives you a bit of background, so to speak.
Some people may call you a man of faith. Would you put a label on your faith or on your particular brand of spirituality?
Probably not. I would define myself as a Christian or Christian-minded. Your whole being probably is, if you brought up a Christian, your whole being or your whole, what defines you is your upbringing on your faith. People might actually say that I'm a Christian. I'm not really sure. That would be a label that I wouldn't put on it. I would say that I have a deep understanding and seeking to find a better understanding, but not much else.
It's a bit about a journey, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, and at times, I guess, for some people, it is about a Christian journey. For others, it's about something else. I think I see spirituality as not a static thing. It's always evolving, always changing.
Yeah, I think it does change, and I think as you grow older, you see that it changes. When you're younger, you don't. I don't know, as a younger person, I didn't put much thought into it as I have as I've got older. I put more thought into it, I think, about your principles in life, where your faith is concerned, and where you see yourself going with your faith, I think, in the world. Because the world is ever-changing, and faith is brought up a lot to do with Muslim, being a Muslim and being a Christian, as in the media portray that a lot, and so because of that, I think it's ever-changing for that purpose.
Hi, I'm Cyndi Lauper, and if you just want to have fun, do you? Keep listening to Joy 94.9 FM.
You are with the priest and the pom and the panellist tonight. No puff, except the panellist is a puff.
True.
And in fact, and he's a pope. Now, you sure he's a pope? You're on the Spirit Lounge with Joy and Bertie and Peter tonight. And we have a fascinating interview with Noel from the Seventh-day Adventist Kinship, who has also contributed the music for this evening.
Yes, but first, if you would like to join in by saying anything you'd like to say,
yeah,
you can SMS us on 047JOY949, or you can email us at onair@joy.org.au.
Or you can phone on 1300 569 949. And if you have any experience with the Seventh-day Adventist Kinship, or anything you'd like to contribute to the programme, we'd love to hear from you.
Just say something nice about us.
Yes, you just send us an email saying hello.
That someone did that last week, didn't they?
Yes, they did. They did. Now, look, we've got second track, which is Jason and DeMarco yet again. And this track is called It Is Well.
It's like a river, a tender...
involved in the Seventh-day Adventist Church, is that right?
Yes, I was. I was born into the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and by that I say that my mother was a Seventh-day Adventist, and she indoctrinated us into that principles of the Seventh-day Adventist Church and that faith. My father was a Catholic, so my mother had a mixed marriage. I went along to a Catholic or a convent school and was probably well indoctrinated into the Seventh-day Adventist faith by my mother, and so therefore the Catholic faith, and I'm both baptised a Seventh-day Adventist and a Catholic. Catholic before I was a Seventh-day Adventist. My mother didn't stop that at the time because she said that it was at least some spirituality, and so therefore being in the country, in the Seventh-day Adventist Church, not being in the country back in the early years, and not seeing anyone from the Seventh-day Adventist Church in the years that we spent out in the country, my mother was quite happy for us to go along to the convent school and be educated in the Catholic faith. But I couldn't tell you very much about the Catholic faith because my mother had got to us before the actual Catholic faith did. I've heard, and I can't quote it, but I've heard that Archbishop actually said that if you give a child to him before seven, that you would be brought up in that faith and only remember that faith. And I think that stands quite well with a lot of people who go from faith to faith. Their original one always has a great deal to play in their life. And so we take, as we get older, we take what our parents, the values our parents give us, and then we define them ourselves to what we want. I'm a great believer in thinking that outside, being with your mother and father, and when you actually grow older, you actually choose your own faith. And then I chose the Seventh-day Adventist faith when I was about 18 and got baptised in the Seventh-day Adventist faith. Now, I don't subscribe to a lot of the principles that the Seventh-day Adventist Church has now as a gay person, but at that time, when I was 18, I was not a practicing homosexual. I hadn't come out of the closet and didn't even think that I was gay when I was 18. Didn't realise I was gay probably until I was about 19. So I always thought I was a little different to others. I didn't have eyes for women. Had eyes for men, but those things weren't in my head until I was about 19.
Obviously, your coming out story is kind of steeped in all this church tradition. This particular faith community, what are their sort of views on gay and lesbian issues? How did you find it?
In the beginning, probably I didn't find out about the Seventh-day Adventist Church having any views on homosexuality at all in the beginning. I didn't read creed that the Adventist Church has, and they didn't actually mention anything until 1999, and they put it in their 28, they have a creed called the 28 Fundamental Beliefs, and then a piece was put in about homosexuality in 1999. Their view on marriage was between a man and a woman, and there's always been that. Their principles are based on the Bible only, and so being a fundamentalist church and a very fundamentalist church, it's family orientated, and so therefore didn't think anything of it. It wasn't until I had come out to my mother, and then I didn't come out to my father, although my father found out through my mother, and my father never ever said anything against my sexuality. My mother did in the beginning, but then became more educated as time went on, whereas my mum's family, they actually wrote me quotes out of the Bible and sent them to me, and that's when I found out that more about the actual statements of the Seventh-day Adventist Church and what the Bible actually supposedly says about homosexuality. Sodom and Gomorrah was one of the things that was brought up a great deal.
Isn't it always?
I don't think it is so much today. Some of the churches, I know the Seventh-day Adventist Church doesn't bring up Sodom and Gomorrah anymore. JWs, Jehovah's Witnesses, do. And I've had it actually preached to me at the front door. When confronted with people who come round door to door, the Seventh-day Adventist Church has a tendency not to go door to door anymore. They've changed over. They still have a underlying principle, I suppose, about faith and works, but they're more faith than they are works.
Hello, this is Katie Lang on Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
And you're on Spirit Lounge with Bertie and Joy and Peter. And we're talking to Noel, who's the Australian coordinator of the Seventh-day Adventist Kinship.
I just asked Noel, when you came out to your mum and other members of the families, how did the leadership of the Seventh-day Adventist Church you went to react?
I didn't tell them. I stepped probably aside from that, and I didn't advise them, and my folks didn't advise them of my sexuality. I was young, and because you're young, you may find a woman at a later date. I think it's a church that actually frowns upon singles. It's not a church that actually advocates for people to be single. It likes you to be married.
And have lots of children.
Yes.
I was in a church like that, I understand.
It's very family-orientated, and I think because it's very family-orientated, it's the aspect of it is that you would marry and that you would find a woman partner, not a male partner, and that you would go and procreate. It's the only church, probably along with the Catholic Church, that has schools and hospitals. And so from that it has fairly good principles when you actually get bought, you go to the school and you get grounded in the faith from that aspect.
So it's a fairly kind of all-encompassing.
It is an all-encompassing, and then that brings you to being, when you're ostracised from a family, it's like breaking away when the family actually disowns you. And my mum's family disowned me immensely. It was like I'd actually changed overnight and become a leper.
It would be like losing your whole world if that was the tradition that you'd grown up in.
It was. It was actually losing my whole world. It was losing my aunts, losing my cousins, ostracised to the point of being over the top. The church I didn't ever come out to. I never came out to the church. I actually stepped aside from the church, moved away from it. Because of its attitude or my family's attitude, I then moved away from the church. Still went along on, because it's called the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and its background is the Sabbath on Saturday. They believe in the seventh day Sabbath, celebrate the Sabbath from sundown on Friday to sundown on Saturday. And I suppose I went along because they were still my family, but distanced myself from the family. Still do go along from time to time, a case of slipping in the back and not being involved with anything, and purely going now to be entertained. If there's anything on at the church and they have a good entertainment sometimes, I'd like to go and watch the entertainment, but I'm not involved with the Seventh-day Adventist Church at all.
That must have been an incredibly painful experience for you, being rejected by family and having to walk away from the church. How did you get the strength to go on?
From my gay family. I moved to Sydney in 1980, and I found a lot of gay people who supported me. And I told my mother that there was more camaraderie and friendship from the gay side of things than from the church. And the church being a family orientated, I found that the gay lifestyle was family orientated as well from the people that I mixed with. And I found that they supported me. The people who I met in Sydney when I first went to Sydney supported me. People I've met in Brisbane before I went to Sydney, but not from a faith background, more as a person-to-person background. And then I got my feet and then left Brisbane, mainly because I couldn't handle the family pressure. My grandmother was a staunch Seventh-day Adventist. Just having all the relatives around and having that close-knit involved, it was better that I actually left and gave myself a gap in between all that. And then when I went to Sydney, I found a group of people who supported me. I was probably very lucky.
That probably leads into talking about SDA kinship.
Seventh-day Adventist kinship?
Yeah, and can you tell us what the Seventh-day Adventist kinship is and who it is for?
It's for gay and lesbian people and bisexual and transgender and intersexed people that just happen to be Seventh-day Adventist, not just happen to be gay. I would say happen to be Seventh-day Adventist, and then realising that they're gay or they are gay, and then come out and be in that faith group. Seventh-day Adventist Kinship is a support group. It's not a counselling group. It supports you. It lets you know that you're not the only gay in the village. I thought I was the only gay in the village. In 1981, I saw a column and a half about SDA kinship put in by a group in Melbourne of SDA kinship people, and it was put in the Sydney Star Observer. And I saw that and I thought, wow, there are other gay people in the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and I thought I was the only person at the time.
Beautiful. And good evening. You are on the Spirit Lounge with Joy the Priest and Bertie the Pom and Pope Peter the Panelist.
Yes.
And we're missing our normal Puff because he's hanging out in Hong Kong for a couple of weeks. He's meant to be working, but...
Well, that's what he tells us, isn't it?
Anyway, we now have the final part of the interview with Noel, who is from the Seventh-day Adventist Kinship.
1981, I saw a column and a half about SDA kinship put in by a group in Melbourne of SDA kinship people, and it was put in the Sydney Star Observer. And I saw that and I thought, wow, there are other gay people in the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and I thought I was the only person at the time. And then a big world opened to me because through that, one of my cousins who happened to be out of the church at the time in what you would call the scene, heterosexual scene, not gay scene, had met a lot of people who were gay and who actually were Seventh-day Adventists. And so it just opened up my eyes completely to another world immensely. And then I became a member of SDA Kinship and have been a member since the 1981 ad. It had its ups and downs and gone away and then come back again. And then I decided that in 1999 that I would contact America again because it's SDA Kinship International or Seventh-day Adventist Kinship International is based in the States, and I contacted them again, and then I was given a name for a contact here in 1999, and in 2000 I decided I would set it up again here in Australia.
So when you were structuring this new group in Australia, can you tell us a little bit about how you went about that? Like, does the group regularly meet together? Is it a bit more informal?
Well, I had a list. America had a list of people who had actually joined their website. They have a website, and they had a list of people over the years that actually contacted them. And I was fortunate enough in 2000, they gave me that list of names and addresses of people here in Australia. And then I started up the group through that by contacting those people. And then by contacting the gay media and by advertising kinship in the gay media, not setting it up here as it was actually set up as Seventh-day Adventist Kinship in America. So I've gone from being probably part of Kinship International to Kinship calling ourselves SDA Kinship Australia. We're still part of the main body, as in brothers and sisters, but kinship is run solely in Australia by Australians.
Is it predominantly an online presence or...?
Online presence. We do have a group meeting once a year, and that's held in Sydney. The group members are entitled to... I don't organise any other meeting for them. If they wish to have a meeting in Melbourne or other meetings in Sydney or in any other... Because we have a broad spectrum of members now. We have members in Papua New Guinea, Indonesia and New Zealand. If those groups choose to have a meeting, they can well do organise that themselves. It's an informal group, it's not a formal structured group.
So what's the relationship between SDA Kinship Australia and the Seventh-day Adventist Church in Australia?
It has supporters within the hierarchy of the Seventh-day Adventist Church in Australia. It doesn't contact the hierarchy of the Seventh-day Adventist Church in Australia and try to make them see reason. I don't believe that that's kinship's mission. Kinship's mission is to support those who have been hurt by the organisation and give them some sort of guidance or structure with their lives. It's there to give you support. With its meeting once a year, you can come along to that and meet other like-minded people. It's a small organisation, although Seventh-day Adventist Church is also small in Australia. It's not a big organisation.
So would most of your members of
Seventh-day Adventist kinship still be attending Seventh-day Adventist churches?
Out of the 10 years that I've been running it, and the people that have contacted me, it's about 50-50. A lot of those people are still closeted, haven't come out from probably the church's perspective and also their family's perspective. And so kinship has a huge job in allowing people to interact as much. And so from that point of view, having meetings is the only way that you can interact with other members of their church who happen to be gay.
That must be incredibly difficult for them, to be in a church where the focus is on family, on getting married and procreating, and to find out they're gay but trying to remain within it?
I think the older people, and by that I say people from probably the age of 40 onwards, have the biggest difficulties with the organisation. I don't think young people today have as much. There's not as importance played on it as much as what there was in the 50s and 60s. And 70s. Young people today are sort of left alone a little, and of course today knowledge has increased, and because knowledge has increased about gay and lesbian issues, I think there's more acceptance on the ground roots of the SDA church, other than the hierarchy. The actual church has stated that homosexuality is a sin as far as they're concerned, and that you wouldn't go to heaven.
So you mentioned earlier, just to backtrack a little bit, you mentioned that you don't see STA Kinship's role as providing any sort of voice or lobbying the official church stance on homosexuality. So I guess my question is, how do you see the church's views changing if your organisation...
I don't think the church is a company... and I can't see the church as itself ever changing in my lifetime. The grassroots of kinship is from the people who sit in the pews up. Today, most people are aware of gay people. If they haven't got a brother or a sister or a family member that's gay, and they see how those people are not sinful. Years ago, you could actually explain things away by saying that gay and lesbian people are all just like the people who go to the Sydney Mardi Gras. I don't believe that today gay people are seen as that. Education has improved, and I think that kinship is better off. If you want to be a militant, and we have contacts within the hierarchy of the Adventist Church here in Australia, and those people are very supportive of kinship, but as far as lobbying them to change their fundamental beliefs, I don't think it will ever change. And so kinship's mission is probably would be better to handle people within the pews, try and find people who are supportive within that group. And by having a meeting every year, I try to involve those people who are supportive within the organisation to come and speak to gay and lesbian people. From that aspect, it gives you a broader knowledge of gay and lesbian people, but by that token, it also gives gay and lesbian people a broader knowledge of those people who are accepting of us.
Noel, finally, can I just ask, if people are interested in the Seventh-day Adventist kinship, how can they get involved?
By contacting us through the website. It's called www.sdakinshipaustralia.org.
Thank you very much, Noel.
Hello, this is Gretel Colleen, and you're tuned into Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Hi, my name is Josh Thomas, and you're listening to Joy 949, which is it's for gay people.
And that last track was by Katie Lang,
the one and only,
and it was called "The Water's Edge," and it's off her new album called "Sing It Loud."
And what you don't know is we had to listen to the priest singing and wailing along to that as well.
Oh, that's not true. Now we're on Spirit Spa, and yay! Bertie is going to tell us what we can do with our bananas if we can afford them.
Go bananas! Yeah. Okay, time to get your clothes off, get in the spa with your bananas.
They're not going to make any mess, are they?
Can you peel them first, please?
Certainly.
I decided to look into this amazing fruit, bananas. And you know I like to start with a little bit of trivia first, don't you? So before we look at the medical benefits of the banana, here's a few fast facts just for fun. Bananas were probably the first ever discovered fruit in the earth, maybe. Should we start that one again? Banana was probably the earth's first fruit. One of the first records was back in India in 327 BC. Other records then suggest that they grew in Malaysia and Papua New Guinea. Now, in Australia, this is interesting, the earliest recorded appearance of bananas in Australia was in the early to mid-1800s, when Chinese migrants brought the plants with them when they began their life in Australia, which was in Carnarvon in Western Australia. And in 1870s, when sugarcane growers from Queensland went looking for cane cutters in the Pacific Islands, they also brought banana plants back with them. So that's really interesting, because that's when banana plants started to be planted.
I saw lots of fallen over bananas.
I know.
When I was up in the cyclone area.
Can they swim?
No.
Oh. Well, and look, there are more than 500 varieties of banana in the world.
Yeah, I found that amazing.
And the word banan is Arabic for finger. Not a lot of people know that. And in Eastern Africa, you can drink banana beer.
That sounds gross.
It sounds like Harry Potter butter beer, doesn't it? Except this is banana beer. And today, India is the largest producer of bananas, followed by Brazil. There you go. I know. Now, so going bananas comes from the effects bananas have on the brain, because bananas have a huge volume of potassium in them. And that potassium helps keep oxygen levels normalised and also promotes strong signals between cells. So your brain functions properly. Potassium can also boost your brain power. Research has shown that potassium can make us more alert. So, you know, that sort of graveyard shift after lunch where you've probably had too much to eat and you're feeling a bit sluggish, you know, have a little bit of banana. Have you noticed when you're watching high-level athletes, whether it's tennis or athletics or anything, footballers, have you noticed that they sometimes eat banana?
I have, and I'm just thinking that maybe next week before we do the program, we could all do with eating a banana.
Well, I was going to bring some in, but I couldn't afford it. But that's because bananas contain three natural sugars, sucrose, fructose and glucose. And of course, all of those combined gives you an instant sustained boost of energy. So that's why you see athletes chomping away on bananas, because it just fires them up again. Yeah. And it's allowed.
That's interesting.
Now, here's a question for all of you. Do you ever put, when it's hot in the summer, well, we can't remember what that's like, can we? Anyway, when it is hot in the summer in Melbourne, do you put your bananas in the fridge ever?
No.
No. They go yucky.
Well, you see, this is, because I've heard so many mixed reports. Most fruits, when they're ripening, release gases, and bananas release an ethylene gas. And that's why you must never put them in the same bowl as your other fruit, because that gas makes other fruit ripen quicker.
I didn't know
so
that.
That's why, you know how shops sell banana trees, so you should always hang your bananas on a banana tree or keep them in a separate bowl.
I've never seen a banana. Do you ever have a banana tree?
No, I've never seen.
Yeah,
I've seen those plastic things where you can put your unused banana, if you only eat half of it, in a plastic.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Banana shaped thing. Yeah.
So always keep bananas separate from other fruit, because otherwise other fruit ripens more quickly and you might not want that. But, you know, the purpose of the fridge obviously is to lengthen the shelf life of any fruit. So if you put underripe bananas into the fridge, they won't ripen. But if your banana has reached ripeness for you and you want to preserve it, you can put it in the fridge. But what will happen is the skin will go black, but inside the fruit will remain the same. So then why people go, "Ew," is because you don't really want to eat a black banana. But as soon as you peel it, it's perfectly fine inside.
Oh. But don't you want your bananas to over-ripen so someone makes a lovely banana cake?
Ah, well, you see, we're coming on to that in a minute. We're going to talk about banana smoothies. I mean, I prefer mine more greeny, really, not too ripe. I prefer them a bit more green. But health benefits. Now, here we go. This is really interesting. So depression. According to a recent survey undertaken by Mind amongst people suffering from depression, many felt better after eating a banana. This is because bananas contain the natural mood enhancer, tryptophan, which is a type of protein that the body converts into serotonin. So we've all heard of serotonin. That is known to improve your mood. And now that autumn's here, we're coming into winter, SAD syndrome could be upon us. If you suffer from SAD syndrome, eat bananas, because they enhance your mood and make you feel happier. Now, for those people who have dodgy blood pressure, bananas, high in potassium, yet low in salt, make it perfect to beat high blood pressure, which of course can lead to strokes. Potassium is a vital mineral which helps normalise the heartbeat, sends oxygen to the brain, regulates the body's water balance.
But if you're on potassium tablets, you should actually check with your doctor before you eat bananas.
You should.
Because potassium, if you have too much of it, can do bad things to your heart.
You absolutely should. Yes, this is if you're not on any extra medication.
Yep.
Okay, hands up. Who's ever had a hangover in their life?
No, none of us, really. We're the Pope and the priest. Do you expect us to confess to that?
And the pom is drunk enough for the three of us.
Warm beer, probably.
Cheeky. No, we've got fridges in Scotland, you know.
No, you don't need them, you just put them outside.
We do. Now listen, hangovers, one of the quickest ways to cure a hangover. Have you ever tried this? To make a banana milkshake with honey.
No,
you
I haven't. Try that?
Okay, because the banana and the milk calms the stomach, and with the help of the honey, it builds up the depleted blood sugar levels. Really cool. Now, quickly, because we've got to get on to one more track, haven't we? Mosquito bites. I hate them. Right, rub the inside of the banana skin on your mosquito bites.
Eat the banana first. Don't waste it.
Peter, you were talking about...
I had a wart when I was a child, and my mother put vitamin E cream and the banana peel and constantly bandaged up, and it did eventually drop off.
Yeah.
It just looked a little weird, but that was okay. It was school holidays.
What, your whole hand dropped off? Or just
no, just the wart. So it does work.
It does. And also, here's a weird one. If you want a quick shine on your shoes... Take the inside of the banana skin, rub it directly onto the shoe, polish with a dry cloth. Obviously, you've got to wipe the banana off, and you've got a shiny shoe. How about that?
And it says bananas must be the reason monkeys are so happy all the time. Well, they're not.
Yeah, monkeys?
No.
Are they not happy all the time?
No, I've seen them in bad moods at the zoo.
Anyway, that was a little snapshot about bananas.
And that was us for this week.
Have we got one more track?
Yes, and you're going to announce it.
Now, this lady's in town this week at the Palais on Thursday. I'm going there. And, don't get on the wrong side of this lady because she can swing a mean punch. I'm, of course, talking about the one and only Grace Jones.
Éclaqué, Joël et Barry.
All right. Hi, I'm Claire Hooper and you're listening to... good one. Hi, I'm Claire Hooper and you're listening to Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.